I love her. I love her very much. I've never had a feeling like
shut
this.
Up.
And speaking of love, weren't you and I going to talk about that today?
Yes, we were.
But, well, couldn't you manage to arrange your time so you could have a little fun, too?
Welcome to VomCom, the podcast about the romantic comedies that you love to hate.
And hate to love. I'm Kat.
And I'm Molly.
We'd like to acknowledge that the recording of this podcast takes place both in the region of Peel, which is part of the Treaty Lands and the territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit,
and Ottawa, which was built on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin Nation territory.
I just saw the wavelength on the recording, and it was just one solid full block of sound.
That's how I know it's working.
Yeah, that's how you know you're at Catherine and Molly volume.
Way up. Way, way, way up.
Okay, let me have one more sip of water, too. Peer pressure.
I know what that jar's from.
What is it?
Sauce.
Maybe. It has, okay, it says Atlas Mason, and it has, like, measurements on the side.
Yeah.
And the one that I, of the sauce, which I also have, I don't think it says Atlas Mason on it. But now I have to go check and compare. This is, like, maybe the one of the things in my kitchen that I've had the longest.
Wow, vintage.
Still trendy. Still trendy, baby.
Still trendy. Jars will never go out of style. Hey.
There's a pun there. I know there is. I just can't think of it right now. Okay, one more sip of
Jar Jar Bing. Jar Jar drinks! I kind of did that on purpose when I knew you were drinking.
Why did you do that? Evil woman. There was so much water in my mouth.
You were gonna drown.
Oh my god.
Literally, I'm so sorry.
I would have rather died and like taken it and drowned rather than spitting it out all over all the most somehow all the most expensive equipment in my entire house is gathered in front of me right now. It would have been like Ottawa woman dead at 20-something. Who knows her real age. Cause of death unknown. She was surrounded by a puddle of water. Clutching her own mouth.
Molly, I will say, swallow game strong.
Are you trying to kill me?
I did that while she was vaping. I need tissues.
Oh my god.
God. I'm so sorry.
Kat, so happy to be back with you recording again.
It feels like we just did this.
I know. A very special day is coming up. Very, very special day.
Very special day. It's my birthday!
Very exciting. And a big birthday, too.
A big birthday. You could probably tell from the title that we are doing the movie 13 Going on 30 because in a week tomorrow from when we're recording this, I am turning 30 years old. 3-0.
The dirty 30.
Dirty 30. It feels like I'm making a big deal out of it. But like I make a big deal out of like big milestone things like this.
Yeah.
And then I felt myself talking about it a lot, and then I tried to stop, and then people would be like, or I would say, oh, I'm going on vacation. Where are you going? No, nowhere. Just like, I'm taking time off for my birthday. And they'll be like, how old are you turning? And I said 30. And then they go, oh, wow. And then they make a big deal out of it. So I'm like, oh, I guess it is a big deal.
Yeah. 30 is like a big milestone. It's a lot of people's like pre midlife crisis.
Yeah.
But I mean, people, that's why people make a big deal of it, I think, is because there's a lot of people who entered their 30s in like crisis mode. Did you know that I think people's Jupiter return happens around the age of 30. Jupiter return is like this thing in astrology, happens once in your lifetime, or maybe twice, maybe every 30 years, something like that.
Oh, where, I think I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like what Jupiter's, what do you call it? Orbit? Comes full circle from when you were born, and it's like symbol Lickly. Whoa, that word came out so slowly. it's meant to be a slow period motion. Of like big change for you, of like kind of what's the word, a big pivot in your life. And it kind of makes sense. I think about this all the time, because it's like, okay, is it really because Jupiter has come around again in full orbit, or is it because at the age of 30 you're like, you've done a lot of experimenting, you've figured out things that work for you, it's probably the time in your life where you're making certain big steps, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is it the planet Jupiter, or is it the natural life cycle? Anyways, questions for another time.
You tell us. Join us on our new podcast. Is it the stars, or is it you?
Astrology.
Astrology. We put the ass in astrology.
We put the hoe in horoscopes.
Wow. Why are we not doing this podcast?
Why? Oh, I thought you were going to say, why don't we just make puns for a living? And I'm like, I'm down.
We're trying to get there. It's weird because I do feel, I don't know. Okay. I don't know what was the chicken and what was the egg, you know? Mm-hmm. And this thing is like, is me making it a big deal, making it feel like I'm on the verge of like a big change or something is changing, but it feels like something is changing and shifting. And I don't know if it's because that's just my intuition or something, or it's just me hoping and looking at, like hoping and being hopeful for the new decade in my life. But it feels like that, which is very scary. And it's taken me like my year of being 29 to like kind of process that 30 is happening. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, we all do it. Like, we all think about what we're going to be like at 30, or what we're going to do, or what our lives are going to be. And it rarely turns out the way that we imagined when we were 19 or 20.
Preach.
And yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what it is, but I am more looking forward to it now than I am filled with a sense of dread, which is, I think, what happened like a year ago. Yeah.
I think it's a combination of things. It's a combination of other people assuming that it will be a big deal for you, so they treat it as such when it comes up in conversation. And also the fact that, I know a lot of things that have happened in your life lately have been significant. So it's like there have been a lot of big significant changes that just happened to happen all at the same time, close to your 30th birthday. So, you know, it's a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B, probably.
Yeah. I think also, to segue into the movie we're going to talk about, I think a lot of it has to do with the media and what we're told the ending of your 20s is supposed to be like, and how you're supposed to feel, and this big kind of looming dread that you're like, oh, my 20s are over, my life is over, now I'm 30 and I have to get married and have a child and have a house and all that kind of shit. Bitch, not in this economy at all.
How are we supposed to be 30, flirty, and thriving in this economy?
Literally, like, how are you supposed to?
Like, that's not even a joke, y'all. This is a real question.
Yeah, we're asking. This is not a joke. This is the podcast. How are you supposed to be 30, flirty, and thriving?
Let's get the Sex and the City ladies on here to answer that for us. I'm pretty sure there's a few episodes of that show talking exclusively about this topic.
Because, like, Carrie was like in her mid to late 20s when that show started, right?
Pretty sure.
And then she turned 30 on the show.
Pretty sure. Because they did that one episode crazy. Where she was like on, remember she was like on the cover of a magazine and she came in, she was late, hungover, makeup all messed up, her hair was all goofy looking, and she like got on the cover and they didn't even do anything to her makeup. Anyways, the whole, oh my God, that's a long-winded way of me saying that she looked bad on the cover magazine, which was supposed to be about her being like 30 is the new 20, blah blah blah, but then it was like 30 is the new 20 ? You know, and they kind of like flipped it on her and made her look kind of bad, which, you know, upon rewatch, did they make her look bad, or is Carrie just a bad look in general? Perhaps another question for another
Whoa.
Day.
But, That's for our second. I said Second City. That's for our Sex and the City podcast.
Yeah. I had a dream that you and I had a Sex in the City podcast, actually. And every single time we would record, we'd be like, oh my God, we hate this show.
I think that actually mirrors the actual conversation we had where we were like, oh my God, should we do a Sex in the City podcast? Mm-hmm. We would just hate it every week.
It would be a hate watch. Yeah. Hate watch podcast. And I can only hate watch so much because, like, you know, your inner reserves of hatred might be deep, but they're not bottomless, you know?
That was deep. Wow.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah, so it's like movies like this that shaped what 30 was supposed to look like, you know? I'm supposed to have this huge apartment and live, I guess she lives alone because they go to his apartment later, but she lives alone. Mm-hmm. She has a big adult job and she barely goes back home to see her parents. Like, she's so financially independent and so far mm-hmm. removed from her parents.
Goals, honestly.
Yeah, and like, she's like one friend, and they go out and get cocktails, and then they just meet guys at the bar, and they go up to them, and her boss is relying on her to save the magazine, you know?
Yeah, watching this movie, 13 going on 30, was an experience. I have so many questions. Should we talk about the logline and the kind of premise a little bit, and then jump into it? Because I have so many questions that I want your take on.
I forgot to pull that up because of the whole microphone debacle, but I'll bring it up now. First of all, this movie came out in 2004. It has a 6.2 stars out of 10 on IMDb. I don't know where the Rotten Tomato score is, but whatever. So the log line for this movie is... A girl makes a wish on her 13th birthday and wakes up the next day as a 30-year-old woman. That's it.
Horrifying.
Plain, period.
This is one of those movies you could edit to be a horror movie. Like, it was genuinely very alarming. Imagine.
Oh, here's another tagline. So IMDb does, like, more. So that was the one that's at the top of the page. And then there's another mm-hmm. one. So other taglines, and it says, for some, 13 feels like it was just yesterday. For Jenna, it was. Like, that's a better one.
Yeah, I like it. It's snappy, short and sweet. Leaves a lot to the imagination.
So if anyone doesn't know, it stars Jennifer Garner, Mark Ruffalo, Judy Greer, Andy Serkis, Kathy Baker, who plays the mom. Hold on. There was somebody who I wanted to make note of. Oh, Krista B. Allen, who plays the young Jenna, which is, like, the most perfect casting of all time. Mm-hmm. I thought all of the kids were such a good casting for the adults, because the little one who plays a younger Judy Greer, amazing.
So I forgot that Judy Greer was in this movie. And then when we were watching it, you see the kid version of Judy Greer's character. And I went, that kind of looks like Judy Greer as a kid. Because I forgot that she was in this movie. And even though this genre is literally her bread and butter, she's always, like, the best friend, right? She's always, like, the...
Yeah.
I was so thrown off. I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Cool. Got it. I'm caught up.
And then Susan Egan, who played Megara in Hercules, she mm-hmm. barely spoke in this movie. She was just... So, like... At Jenna's work, she has her secretary, who is played by Marsha DeBonis, and she plays Arlene. And then the other kind of ally that she has in the office is Susan Egan, and that's the lady who played Meg. And then also amongst the little six chicks, a young Brie Larson
and Ashley Benson. Benson? Ashley Benson?
Really?
I think so. The one, Ashley something, she was on the Pretty Little Liars. She was one of the liars.
Yeah, Ashley Benson was on it, but I didn't recognize her.
Yeah, she was one of the six chicks. I had a gripe with the kid that they cast as a young Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, yeah. Though.
He looked nothing like Mark Ruffalo. Very distinctive face.
Yes, he does. And also, the little... I didn't realize this until I just watched it recently, but he had a little fat suit on, or like a little tummy.
Oh.
Because it was too square. Like, you could see that it was literally like they had told him to shove a pillow underneath his shirt, because you could see kind of like the squareness of it at the top.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I guess all the budget in this movie did not go into SFX, as was clear from the sparkle transitions. All the money from this movie went into licensing for the sick songs that they put. Like, there were so many huge songs in this movie.
I think that this movie shaped my love of 80s songs. Because also, okay, I will start off by saying this is one of my absolute favorite movies / rom-com movies. I lived off of this DVD for such a long time. Which is also why I think 30 is such a big number to me, because I've always been looking towards that number because of this movie. Mm-hmm. And then every time every song played, like, obviously I know the songs, but I was just like, yes, this is how I originally know where this is from. And then the one that was playing, which is not an 80s song, but the one that was playing while they were doing all the photo shoots, like, later on in the movie.
Yeah. What song was that?
Why Can't I Breathe Whenever I'm
Thinking About You. Oh, Why Can't I by Liz Phair?
Yeah. Obsessed with that song. It was hot on my LimeWire.
So many good songs.
Have you watched this movie before this watch?
Let me tell you.
Yeah.
I started this movie probably 5 times. I never got past the scene where she walked into her office, which is very close to the beginning of the movie, because I just cringed out. I just couldn't handle it. Because the whole process of, so she's 13, she makes a wish, she wakes up, she's 30, she's got a whole life. And the concept of being in her shoes, where I would have to pretend to know a bunch of shit that I'm supposed to know, is a waking nightmare. And I was just, she kept on like doing these things that were, they made sense for a 13-year-old to do, but in the body of a grown adult woman, it was horrifying.
Yeah, to see. So that's the same problem my boyfriend had watching it. I've never seen him react like this to a movie, but he was reacting so viscerally while I was just grinning like an idiot beside him. I don't know, I think it's my cringe meter is so like low.
You also knew because you've seen the movie before. Yeah, and we all know she's going to get away with it. You know, she's going to charm her way out of the situation. She'll be fine. It's just like you can't like dissociate yourself from imagining if like what if you were in her shoes, and like it's just so She just says a few things too. The biggest cringe part for me was when she goes out to a bar with Judy Greer and they're drinking. And her and Judy goes, that guy behind you is like checking you out. And she goes to go talk to him. She's like, yeah. And she goes over. She walks past the guy that Judy Greer was looking at and goes up to this like maybe 12, 13-year-old kid and starts like chatting him up. And I was like, I literally like jumped off the couch. I was like, no, they didn't. Like, I was also watching it with my boyfriend and he said, imagine if the roles were reversed, like if that was a man. He goes, this movie would be in jail.
Mm-hmm. They would put the whole DVD, they would place it on the bunk bed.
Yeah, and put like a big padlock, a metal padlock from cartoons on top of it with a big chain.
Yeah.
You're done for.
It's so... I want to get to your questions. And we're not going to like run through the whole plot, and I don't want to go through what exactly happens, but like basically it's Jenna Ring's 13th birthday. She's trying to impress all the cool girls at school. They kind of coerce her into being like, well, do our project and then we'll come, which is sad. And then they kind of just trick her and they end up stealing her food. And
That was a real like insult to injury. They took the food on the way out. Oh god,
they took the food on the way out. And like her lovely sweet like best friend who lives next door made her dream house with all like a little cut out of him, a little cut out of her, and a cut out of her favorite like musician and stuff. And he gave her little dream house, and it was so sweet.
And
he sprinkled
in the bathroom a tiny toilet made out of buttons and like a empty spool of thread. So creative.
Oh, I didn't notice the toilet. I was trying to see the doll that was behind her face in the bathtub, because it's got like crazy hair in the back, which is funny. I was just trying to figure out the doll, so I didn't notice the toilet. But it was cute house. Like, he worked like 3 weeks on it, and he gives it to her right before the kids come for the party. He sprinkles like fairy dust that he buys in a packet, which is so gimmicky. It's just like, here, kids, buy a pack of glitter.
Bro, would they not kill if they made that product in real life? A little packet of glitter and called it wishing dust? That shit would sell like hotcakes.
That shit, yeah. Parents would revolt because then it'd be glitter everywhere in their house, but, you know.
Yeah, game over. Unless it was biodegradable or something. Ooh. Anyways, we'll workshop that later.
But, yeah, so then he gives it to her. The kids come and she's like, oh, I gotta put this away. I hide this embarrassing thing. And then it just turns out to be such a shitty party. She thinks she's going to kiss, like, her crush, but then it turns out to be him. And then she freaks out, makes the wish, and then she wakes up in her 30-year-old body, which is very jarring. So I want to get to your questions, because what questions do you have? I have very little questions, because it's so funny how, like, my willing suspension of disbelief, I don't know if it's just because I really like Jennifer Garner. I think she did well, and I love Mark Ruffalo, so I'm just already, like, I've already bought into this movie. I have barely any questions, only after the fact. While I'm watching it, I'm just like, I'm having the best time.
Okay, that's, you've answered most of my questions already, actually, which is, like, I was kind of wanted to know, like, what you liked about it, and, like, what, I don't know, my questions are more like, huh? Like, just a little... It's not like, I'm not looking at this like it's a bad movie, like, oh, it's a horror, like, I don't hate it. I actually kind of like this movie. Like, it's fun. The outfits are bomb. Like, I really fuck with that one all khaki outfit with the porcupine quills in the hair.
I knew you were going to love that outfit.
I love it. I don't, like, what is her job at the magazine? How does she afford that apartment? How does her professional... football player boyfriend? Basketball?
Hockey player.
How does her professional hockey player boyfriend have a smaller apartment than her? She is some kind of executive at a women's fashion magazine.
She and her friend, who is Lucy, they are magazine editors.
Okay.
And then Andy Serkis, who is their boss, is the editor-in-chief. She's not even the editor-in-chief.
Yeah, that was what was baffling me. But you know what? This is rom-com world. And as we know, they exist in an alternate universe where, like, the people who have the coolest jobs get paid the most.
Yeah.
So therefore, a magazine editor would be rolling.
Yeah. Also, I think, I can't remember much about her hockey player boyfriend's apartment, but I thought behind him there was a set of stairs, so I didn't know if his was like a loft. I don't know. Can't remember.
New York is a strange and mysterious place. There's many lofts. Mm-hmm. There's one scene where you see, like, I love how they portray Maddie as being like, okay, so when she wakes up in her 30-year-old body, she gets dragged. She finds out she has this hockey player boyfriend. She's totally baffled. She's never seen a naked grown man before, and he just walks out of her bathroom and
that is terrifying her. If you're 13.
That's what I'm saying. Like, imagine actually being in her shoes. She's already having a panic attack, putting her head between her knees because she just woke up and her whole body's changed. She has no idea where she is. Everything smells, looks different, you know, whatever. She probably has pains in her knees that she never had before. And then she's walking around. All of a sudden, her phone starts ringing. It's a cell phone. She came from the 80s, y'all.
Yeah.
She thinks she's having auditory hallucinations. So she flees her apartment, running downstairs, gets picked up in a cab by Lucy, brought to work, a job that she didn't know she had, to present at a meeting that she didn't know she was going to on a subject that she doesn't know or understand. And then is expected to make these huge changes. It just seems like her job is actually very nebulous, because it's like she's the person who has to deal with a lot of, like, the corporate side of the magazine strategy, but also is responsible for the rebrand and also is doing mood boards and also this and also that. I'm like, girl, what? Is this mm-hmm. a is this a startup where you have to wear many hats? Because I'm confused. Why are there two of your job if you have so many? You know what I mean? Anyways, I'm getting lost in details. But all this terrifying situation for a 13-year-old girl to wake up in a 30-year-old's body. All of this stuff. Where was I going with this?
I had just mentioned how terrifying it was to see a naked man. Yeah.
And then she gets thrown in and she kind of... Oh, right. So she's rolling with the punches a little bit, but then she escapes the meeting. And she finds out that she's kind of a bad person by her secretary giving her some exposition. And then she hunts down Maddie because she's the only person... He's the only person she can think of to reach out to aside from her parents who are on a cruise. So she can't reach them. So she goes to his apartment and that kind of like leads into the next part of the movie. But when you see his apartment, it's like... kind of small and cozy, but then it turns out that he has this whole other enormous photography studio in this like industrial type building, and I was like, but like they kind of made it out like he wasn't doing that well financially. Like, I'm so confused. How are you able to afford all this, bro?
I was wondering where that industrial style of like building was, because he was like, I gotta get home. I was like, wait, aren't you home?
I can tell you where it is.
Where?
It's next to the Brooklyn Bridge. You know how I know?
Oh.
Because the big ass windows in the back, which at all times you can see the perfectly, like, dreamily lit Brooklyn Bridge just hazy through the windows. Because this is New York City.
New York City. Maybe it was his, like, photography studio, but maybe we don't know the story. It's not his. Maybe it's he rents it with other artists. Because that happens.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But again, this is rom-com world where it's like she has a whole huge apartment by herself.
I love her closet. She has my dream closet. To walk in and be flanked on both sides by fully open and like beautifully organized double hangers. And then on the end, at the short end, have a full shoe rack wall. Ugh, that's perfection.
It's always... Okay, like, I know it's this type of girly and stuff, but I don't know any 30-year-olds who are wearing heels exclusively.
She was wearing tall heels, too. They were 5-6 inches every day, at least.
Exactly. So, like, and she has... That's the thing I found the most, like, unbelievable about, like, Sex and the City. And I don't know if it's just because I'm not exposed to this type of woman who works for a magazine or something.
Eastern European women. Always in heels.
But like, even seeing the, like, girls who work on Vogue now, because, like, they do behind the scenes or whatever, they do tips about, like, wear your running shoes to work and then change into your heels at work. So it's, like, none of the girls in these movies and TV shows or whatever are ever wearing sneakers and then changing shoes. And, like, some of the things about being 30... that I know we all go through were not brought up in this movie. Like, she was eating ice cream, like, no problem. Bro,
exclusively, she was on a hummingbird diet. It was sugar only.
It was truly just sugar. And she was just doing whatever she wanted. And I was like, girl, I know that the point is, like, now that you're an adult, you can do whatever you want. But it's also like we are at the mercy of our bodies, and she's going to work and she's going to Greenwich Village in her little slip dress, trench coat and high like crystal heels walking in New York City. And then she finds Maddie and then they go on another walk. Oh, actually, at that point when they return to her apartment, she has her shoes off in New York City.
Disgusting.
Disgusting.
Rats.
And there's not one scene. And then she like gets ready to go to the party where she's wearing huge heels again. And I'm like, there's not one scene where she's like has to take a nap or ice her feet because she's literally just been wearing heels all day. Like to go from a
13-year-old. Or has like a sugar crash or her she breaks out from all the shit food she's been eating.
Yeah, exactly.
So whack.
That's the thing that I'm going to knock off, like, a point for when I do my scale, when I do my rating, because that's the thing where I'm like, see, this is setting unrealistic expectations for women, because after, like, even after 23, 24, 25, after those ages, we start to feel shit in our knees and our backs in our necks and our pussies and our cracks. And not one single time has it ever been mentioned in a Sex and the City or a 13 going on 30.
You know what I would watch the hell out of? Mm. A remake of this, but they make it more like realistic of like actual things that you encounter when you're 30. Like, I think that the message of this movie, I felt like this movie was a bit haphazard in its messaging. Like, what is the moral of the story here? Mm. Because when you start off, she just wants to be older and she has all these things that she wants. And then when she gets there, she's achieved all these things she wants, but she finds out she's a bad person, right?
Yeah, because it was all superficial, the things that she wanted.
Right.
She wanted things, she wanted a job, she wanted the apartment.
Yeah, shoes. So she got everything she wanted, but at what cost, right? She finds out she's not a good person anymore. And then as you go on, there's like, it seems like it's kind of about her, like, realizing that something, like, some things are, like, people are more important than things, and like, to cherish the people who you have in your circle who are, like, uplifting you, kind of thing. Mm. But then also there's the kind of thing of, like, everyone seems to love her, like, youthful take on things. And it's like, oh, you're so unpredictable and you're so crazy and different. You're bringing all these new ideas to the table, which are just, like, ideas a 13-year-old girl would have. So it's like, okay, wait. So, like, that also is a theme of, like, her. But, like, everyone loves that she's so youthful and it's so different for her. But then it's not about that in the end. Because her big pitch is, like, her big pitch for rebranding the magazine is not anything to do with, like, a youthful persona or, like, valuing the people in your life that you love. It was about showing more realistic body types and characters in magazines, I guess. It seemed very, her pitch seemed very vague. And then at the end, the whole thing about her going to, like, try and get Maddie to, like, leave his fiance to marry her. And then it seemed like the message was about, like, you can't, like, it was like you only have one shot at life. There were so many different messages that I was like, what is the central theme here? What's the central takeaway? I don't know.
I think that, see, like, they didn't do enough to, like, I think that the script didn't do enough to kind of vocalize what the theme was and what the lesson that she's supposed to learn. It's yeah. all kind of there. They all just kind of plop it in and you're supposed to just do the work yourself. And not even in a way that's like, well, you don't want to think of your audience as stupid, like, we're going to read it out to them. But it's just like, it was a lot happening and you're just trying to catch up and be like, okay, where are we going? What are we feeling?
Yeah.
I think they could have done better with her pitch about what the difference from the poise that they were doing to the poise that she wanted to bring. Sorry, the poise that she was pitching.
Yeah.
She could have voiced it better instead of being like, we should just go back to our roots. And, like, all of this, like, superfluous language, you know? Because, because, like, if... And, like, the only reason why I'm getting this is because I've seen this movie a lot of times, so that I'm remembering more things, and when I just rewatched, I remembered. But, yeah. like, she has that scene with her mom right before, like, when she's 13 years old, she has that scene with her mom, and she's trying so hard to, like, look like the girls in the magazines and look like these other girls that she's going to school with, and stuffing her bra, which is also very yeah. funny, and it was after this movie that I tried doing that, and being like, that looks weird and lumpy, I'm just gonna take it out. But she has that scene and she's absolutely freaking out, just trying so desperately to be liked and all that stuff, right? And she's like, why can't I be like these girls? And she refers to the magazine and the models. And her mom is like, these are not women. These are models, you know? So it's like, that is something she... But even the mom saying, like, these are not women, these are models, that's a little bit, like, that's not a real woman. Like, models are real women. It's just they're made to look a certain way and all that kind of stuff, and they're supposed to look a certain way, otherwise they can't be in the business.
You get what she's going for with that statement, yeah. but it kind of aged badly because of the nuance that we understand now.
Exactly. And then the whole pitch that she's Giving is about seeing real women. She wants to see her best friend's older sister. She wants to see, like, these are the women to look up to, but she doesn't say those words necessarily. She just says, I want to see people like I know and all that stuff. I'm like, okay, but this, the concept is nice, but it's not great for, like, a high fashion magazine where you're on your cover, you have J-Lo, you know?
Yeah.
So I was just like, it was very much like, yeah, it was the idea of a 13-year-old, but a grown woman would have articulated it better. But it's the fact that she gets like a standing ovation.
Yeah. Is like, people are crying.
Yeah. He's so moved to tears. Mm-hmm. And like, that's very much in the rom-com world. But like, I agree with you, because even like, that is another aspect. I think her pitch was the thing I hated the most about the movie. Like, I would,
because you were expecting it was gonna, yeah, you were expecting it was gonna pull everything together and like pull, because yeah, there was all of these mismatch of mayhem and crazy adventures and then like themes running through them, and you're like, okay, there's a lot going on, it's a real mixed bag. I was kind of hoping for that pitch to pull them all together, and it really didn't. It didn't even really hit one very well, in my opinion.
No, exactly.
Because of exactly what you just said. And if you look at the actual editorial content that you put together, it was sick. It was giving very much like, I would say, I remember what Teen Vogue used to be like in the, let's say 12 to 2015 era Teen Vogue. That's what she was pitching. And it was, and so it was like 10 years ahead of its time. It kind of was giving Abercrombie and Fitch like ad campaign, and it was they were good photographs. Like, I just feel like you had it for the purpose of the movie, you had it put together in a way that was very naive and childlike, so the speech also itself didn't have to be so naive and it just could have been a bit more, it could have even been phrasing the way a 13-year-old girl might say it, but in a way that was a bit more to the point, you know?
Yeah. And the thing with her going to Maddie on his wedding day to be like, you shouldn't marry her. Like, I've changed. I swear I'm not the same girl who like hurt you or whatever. Even that is like, there could have been a line where he said something about like, we're not 13 anymore. Like, we can't just do things on a whim or something, because I like, and that's the thing, is that he had that line kind of, but it was not explicitly that. He was like, I care about Wendy, her family is downstairs, like, I'm not just gonna run away with you, you know?
Yeah.
And that, I liked that scene, and then her just being like, oh, okay, like, I got it, and like crying, and understandably so, like, as she should, you know? That's a hard lesson to learn, like, as a 13-year-old, like, in your 13-year-old mind, you're just gonna be like, yeah, I'll say this thing and then it'll work out in my favor. It's not going to. So I like that aspect. It's just, again, there could have been a little bit more to make it cohesive instead of like, what is she trying to do, you know?
Yeah.
And also, I think it is unclear as to whether, like, I know she's saying to Maddie, yesterday I was 13, today I'm this. And he's not understanding that literally something magical has happened.
Yeah.
Right?
From his perspective, this is crazy. This girl who he hasn't talked to in 18 years shows up at his apartment and then kind of stalks him and then hires him to work with her and then is like, actually, I love you on the day of your wedding. And he's like,
Yeah. And it's like, this is the girl he's loved for such a long time. And then he said, I've never felt, there's so many things that he alluded to never having felt the same way about a woman as he did about her when he was 13, where it's like, okay, I remember hearing that line the other day and going, that's red flags for you, my guy.
Yeah.
You were 13 years old. You can't develop emotionally more than that. But so I think it's unclear as to whether everyone is supposed to know, like her best friend or Maddie are supposed to know that she's she is magically 13 years old all of a sudden.
Yeah.
If she didn't want to tell anybody, one, she fucking told Maddie. Two, she's not doing a good job of hiding and pretending. And then, because she's, like, literally doing things like a 13-year-old would do. Like, she's at one point twirling fruit roll-up on her finger and eating it in a, like, in a meeting where his where her boss is basically like, hey, we're in the shitter, like, we're fucked. And she takes a big bite of her fruit roll-up and stands up and she's like, we're not fucked. We can stop this. Like, you know.
Can, there's one part that really made me gag in a way that was...
What part?
When they're in the boardroom during that one scene and their boss, Andy Serkis, goes, Gauss, I talked to management. And he goes, that was not his accent. That was horrible. He was like, they're throwing around the R word. And I went, oh, yeah. What?
I know.
I'm sorry. And then she goes, oh, redesign? And I went, oh, okay.
I also...
And I unclenched.
When I heard it the other day, I went, no. That makes no sense contextually.
Right? Surely can't they wouldn't. Can't be
that. No. Like, no. That makes negative sense.
But yeah. Also, when they said redesign, did they mean rebrand? Is that what that was?
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for when they okay. said R, because that's essentially what they're doing, but they said redesign, and I think... I don't know. I think at the like in 2003, not many companies were doing a rebrand because most companies were kind of new, you know?
And you know what? Fair enough. Maybe the average person doesn't know what a rebrand is, but redesign, you could figure it out from the context, right?
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's one of the things that I have questions about now where I'm like, who's supposed to know that you're 13? Because you're not keeping it a good secret and you're just kind of fucking it up. And then we don't see like any scenes of her learning how to be a magazine editor. There was a couple yeah. of scenes where she's like, she's using her big fucking pencil to write no. on. Also, it's a big
on her duo tangs
on her duo tangs. And like, I swear on one of them, she was writing on like photo prints, like the kind of yep. prints that she had been putting together. I'm like, how is that pencil showing up? So it was And then she just, like, looks so confidently, like, and she closed her duo tangs and she stacked them and she's like, wow, great work today, guys.
Yep.
It was giving very much, like, let's play pretend. You'll be yep. the mommy. I'll be the daddy. Mm-hmm. You're mm-hmm. our little baby, you know, like, on the schoolyard. So I'm like, how did she learn how to do this? We don't have enough scenes where she's, like, figuring out how to be an adult woman, you know?
Yeah.
That's, like, what did they do instead? They were going out and it was just makeup montages. Yeah. And like, I can't she remember what else happened.
She had a shopping montage. She hung yeah. out with, actually, this my favorite scenes in the whole movie were the ones where she was chatting with the other young girl in her building.
Yeah.
Who was like, she said she was 13, right? Or 12, 13 or 12.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's so 13, she was yeah. the age that Jenna was mentally, which is a strange thing to say. But Jenna just doesn't even really try to act
no.
like an adult. And so she's talking to 13-year-old kids and, like, having fun in the way that 13-year-olds would. And it's very cute until you think about the idea, okay, how would I feel if my 13-year-old daughter just randomly started hanging out with a 30-year-old woman who lives in our building? And they're, like, having dress-up dance parties together.
Yeah, sleepovers.
I might ask some questions, you know.
That's when you know that we are adults now, because when I watched this before, I was like, that's so cool. I can't wait till I'm 30 and invite all the 13-year-old girls in my building into my apartment and they can go through my closet and makeup and stuff. And then when I saw that scene the other day, I was like, how did they explain this? Where the moms?
Oh no, we're all just going over to Cindy's house, and then Cindy tells her mom that she's going over to Tracy's house, and Tracy tells her mom that she's going over to Rebecca's house. So it's yeah. the classic, you know,
yeah,
misdirect.
Yes.
When really they're all just going over to try on Jenna's bras, which, by the way, very funny jokes about the boobs too, because it's like,
ugh.
You know, this was like the peak of skinny Hollywood era when Jennifer Garner's boobs were considered to be like big and juicy. No commentary on her as a person. She's a very beautiful woman, but what, she's a B cup?
Yeah. When okay. she said, when
these big juicy boobs fill out my dress. She's
like, these incredible boobs. And I was like, and I was really like,
knockers.
It made me stare at her boobs for a long time. Cause I was like,
right?
They didn't look that big in the cam, like the little slip dress.
Cause she got a push-up bra on underneath that other dress that she puts it on.
Yeah. So she's definitely got a push-up bra, but then, and then, yeah. So like, that's definitely what it is. And then she like grabs them and they look like they're a handful.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, wow, this is very funny. And then I just, again, my willing suspension of disbelief was so willing to go that I went, oh, Jennifer Garner's got big old bitties.
Big old bonkers, yitties. But like, she looks beautiful. And to be fair, she was flat chested yesterday. So, you know, to her, the contrast to her, anything is remarkable. Is tits.
Yeah.
The contrast is the R word. Really cool.
She had a redesign on her chest. We should just call
Kat,
any plastic Kat, surgery.
Kat, big news. I'm doing a rebrand on my booty. From now on, you're going to perceive it as being very voluptuous. Very toned, okay? Can you follow through on that, like, fantasy with me?
Yeah. Got it.
Thank
you. Corporate and I are on board. Let's talk about... Okay, so we talked about the things that were confusing.
Everything.
A lot of it was confusing. However, like, that's the thing, is that, like, it's almost too simple a movie to follow. But then when things are too simple and you don't explain enough, it then raises more questions than if you had explained too much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, at one end of the spectrum, it is 13 going on 30. And then on the other end of the spectrum, it's Tenet?
Okay, I have never seen Tenet yet, so you might have to explain that one to me.
No. I have also never seen Tenet. I just know that it's confusing.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now
it's
I'm
the
with
most
you.
It's the most recent. It's the most recent confusing Christopher Nolan movie. So, that's the example I used. Yeah. So like, there's got to be a good medium where it's like enough information to make us go, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be distracted by my confusion or the questions I have. So I'll follow along. I'll keep going. Just on both ends, from the lack of information on the 13 mm-hmm. going on 30 side, and then the too much information on the Tenet side. So let's move on. You already mentioned your favorite outfit, which was the khaki kind of bustier with the porcupine.
Dude, such a good look. And tell me that that every single outfit in this movie wouldn't be like marked up by 300% at Urban Outfitters and just fly off the racks these days.
1,000%.
Every single item.
Yeah, agreed.
What's your favorite outfit in the movie? I think I know.
Whoa. What is my favorite outfit? There's one that she wears. It's the dress that she wears to go have dinner with Maddie, and then she goes to his apartment and then his fiance's there.
Oh, the floral one?
The floral, like, little dress. Because I think it suits Jennifer Garner a lot. And I think it was the most kind of, like, whimsical young thing that wasn't crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like, yeah, they paired it with a really cute necklace, too. It was, like, this like, pearl necklace with a cool, like, closure. One of those teak that goes through a loop closures. That was nice.
Yeah.
Did you notice the evolution of her style throughout the movie? It was I thought that was a fun touch, because it was like very kooky, sexy, colorful, and then it was like
what a 13-year-old thinks a hot lady would wear. Yeah,
and I didn't love that as soon as that she dressed more like, it's like her fashion spirit got crushed throughout the movie as it went, because it was like as she became more like a bit more serious and like kind of understood the situation a bit more, she like started dressing more soberly. Like it was like there was some cardigans, she was wearing like bootcut jeans instead of the bejeweled heels and slip dresses. And it's like I get it, you know, you're mm-hmm. trying to show that she is like she's like kind of accepting her mistakes and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, like I see what you're trying to do through clothing, but it's also like, you know, you can still have pizzazz and be sad.
Yeah.
Fashion wise.
Yeah. Her outfits definitely got a little bit worse as the movie went on, like just boring. And it's like,
exactly.
Again, it's like the other side of 30 where it's like, you're either this 30 flirty and thriving, or then you become like the mom in Jersey.
Yeah, where God, it's like,
oh,
why?
I'm 30 now, so I got to wear the bootcut jeans and the Converse and the long sleeve t-shirt and unpack. Oh my unpack God,
you just perfectly described
into my that. my dream pink house, you know? And like no shade on either or, but it's just like you can be 30 years old and be serious and still wear like a lot of glitter and hot pink and fancy little shoes. But like again, this is the type of archetypes we had in the mid 2000s rom-coms, yeah. You know?
Yeah. And I think that also, I have to ask, did you like the ending?
Did I like the ending as in her being like magic dusted again? So basically when Maddie like rejects her when she shows up to his house on his wedding day, he gives her the Barbie dream, the dream house back, and she very like the worst kind of walk of shame where she's trying so hard not to cry holding this big ass dollhouse in her arms, and like she's walking across in heels, mm-hmm. and she goes to her front porch and she sets it down and she's just like crying and just looking at it, and then the wind starts to blow, and as she's crying it does the glitter transition, the glitter sparkle transition, and then she wakes up as her she wakes up as her 13-year-old self. And then she basically realizes all the lessons she had learned, takes off her blindfold, mm-hmm. and then jumps on young 13-year-old Maddie and kisses him.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's the ending. And then they run upstairs. Oh, they run into Tom Tom, who is young Lucy. They run into Tom Tom. She quips at her. Offends her, all that kind of stuff, and then they run into the future, and then it's their like wedding day, and then they're moving into a house. When I was younger, I liked the movie. When I was younger, I liked the ending.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the ending is like fine.
I think that that's the only way that it could have ended, for people to be happy.
Exactly,
you know.
Exactly,
although. What I like, I think if this movie got made in this day and age, I think it would be very similar, but I think at the end they wouldn't have got married. I think they would have moved in, and that would have been enough for people, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you? Did you like the ending? Like, did you like it? It was like, whatever. Again,
I like how she got dealt that tough pill to that tough lesson, and then she kind of like accepted her mistake, and then she sat on the front porch, and then the transition back to the closet when she was 13. I liked that part and the super high budget special effects. What I didn't love is how it was just, it's a rom-com, they always wrap it up so tidy and nice like that with a bow, like I can't imagine any other ending, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't hate it, and I didn't like it. It's what I expected, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
The fact that she was moving into a pink house, fuck yeah, cool as hell, love that for her. The fact that she was wearing that out, also that she ended up with Mark Ruffalo, smash. He was so underrated hot this whole movie, gotta say.
Yeah.
Even if he was having an emotional affair while he was engaged, that's fine.
To, like, one of the nicest, sweetest, most trusting women, it's not even like she ever doubted him for a second.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is that it was so, like, I like that because I don't like when they make the other, like, the spouse, the person that they're actually with, like a mean person. So like that's obviously why they're choosing.
Yeah, they make
this
you
other person. You know.
Yeah, I feel like they that these type of scripts always think they have to make you hate the romantic rival, because that's the only, like, she has to be awful, and that's the only way that the person who's cheating can justify cheating, basically. And you as the viewer are like, well, she's awful, what do you want him to do, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't love when they do that, and they did it a little bit, but not super.
Did they do it a little bit?
Yeah, they made it, like, at the beginning when Jenna first meets her, Jenna introduces Wendy to Jenna's boyfriend as Maddie's friend, and she goes, his fiance, actually, because she had just told her that, like, 30 seconds prior, she had to correct her, and there was a few, like, little snippy moments, and then also they were implying that she was kind of forcing Maddie to move to Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, my God, she's so overbearing. She is making him move, and he clearly doesn't want to. I don't know.
Yeah, that is true. I just, because I guess she wasn't obviously mean about it. She was saying it all with a smile that I was like, oh, she's so nice.
A nice adult 30-year-old woman. She was just assertive. She wasn't even being mean. Like, she wasn't.
No.
You perceived that accurately. It was like, but they were trying to, like, make tension, you know?
Yeah, for sure. What's also funny, like, we know he's cheating, but she's also cheating because she's technically with this hockey player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just disappears into the background. Like, she just ignores him. And she ignored the problem for long enough and it went away.
And like, there was, like, no aftermath to the night that they, like, had together where she went over to his house.
Yeah.
And also, when you're, like, 13, I don't know about you, but when I was 13, I knew about sex and what going over to a guy's house meant. It's not play games. I've never thought that. Literally, a guy would be like, I'll meet you later. I was like, oh, my God, to make out? Like, everything.
Oh, my God, after the sun sets?
Making out? It was never like, oh, he didn't even have Battleship or something. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, as usual, we could do an amazing rewrite of this movie.
Obviously, a lot of it was for jokes, which, like, yeah. But, okay, we talked about the fashion. How do you feel about the romance? Cheating aside.
Okay, cheating aside, I liked it because I was buying what Mark Ruffalo and Jennifer Garner were selling. Because they were, first of all, Mark Ruffalo, need I say more? He's got those eyes, you man. Don't. He's just so, like, handsome and quiet. Mm-hmm. His voice is so soft. He was just sultry, you know?
Yeah. Sultry in, like, in a way that, and it's not even, like, in a suave kind of way. It's a very unassuming kind of handsome and like, swagger that he has to himself. Because he's not, like, the kind of guy who walks into a room and you're like, whoa, who is that guy who just walked in? Like, he is kind of like the boy next door where he can be overlooked if you're looking at for, like, a chiseled jaw and big, big muscles. And then you realize that it's been your best friend all along that you're in love with, you know?
See, I always like a quiet man. That would catch my eye. I'm not going to lie. If I walked into a room and I see one guy standing and he's just, like, not fidgeting and just being quiet, I'd be like, whoa.
No, but this is your...
Does he know that I don't?
This is your 30-year-old self thinking.
Oh, that is true. That's
when you're 13, right?
Oh, yeah. I wanted
when we're coming up.
You remember that really famous clip of Paris Hilton or Nicole Kidman saying that she likes boys who look like they're dead? Like, they're just so skinny. And that's the kind of boy that I liked when I was 13. The kind of boy I liked...
when I was 13, looked like Jesse McCartney.
I was gonna guess like a Nick Carter type, 1,000% Jesse McCartney. Yes, absolutely.
Fortunately,
but yeah, I did. I did like the romance because they gave it the screen time that it deserved, for starters.
Yeah. Yeah.
It didn't. I really liked the scene. This is going to sound weird when I say it, but I liked the scene where he rejected her on the day of his wedding because it showed backbone and it showed I don't know what the word is, but like it's like when you're constant and you have, you're like, you stick to your values. What do you call that?
I was just going to say morals. I can't think of the word.
Anyways, he was just, I just liked it. I liked that he didn't take the easy route, and it made me think like, oh, this is kind of a more fleshed out person. And there's a lot of things that Jenna's character did as well that I'm like, oh, that's like more fleshed out of a character. So I liked that they were both kind of flawed. I liked that they had their little quiet moments. Mm-hmm. And I don't love the dynamic of like they put him with someone else in the movie so that her whole romantic relationship was like up against this other woman. Like that part didn't really float my boat. But the general trajectory of it and the fact that they kind of like resolved it in the end made me happy. How about you?
Yeah, this is one of my like favorite romance stories, romance like plot lines. Because also when I was younger, I was obsessed. I was always obsessed with the idea of like falling in love with my best guy friend, like growing up, to the point where anytime I had one, I was like, oh my god, is this it?
Is he the one? Oh my god, it's happening.
It's happening. We're best friends, we're falling in love. So like it has all the markings of the things that I love. And then like you said, Jennifer Garner, who it's obviously very cringy and hard to watch a grown woman act like a 13-year-old girl. It is hard, understandably, but she's so, like, I think it's just the likability of Jennifer Garner that she's, she, like, pulls it off in such a cute, endearing way, to a certain extent. Some points can be cringy, I understand, but mostly I was like, she's so cute and, like, just so sweet. Agreed. You know, like, no wonder Mark Ruffalo's kind of risking it all to just, like,
she's very earnest. Yes. Very earnest, yeah.
Very she earnest, has, like, very sweet, yeah.
Yeah, so the way that the facial expressions she did were, like, you know, tailored to this story. Like, it wasn't like that's not her act, her normal acting style, you know? Like,
exactly.
She did this, you know, like, for, she was saying, okay, what are the facial expressions I did when I was, like a little 13-year-old girl that maybe over time I may have, like, toned down or that may have become more somber, you know, like, just, like, kind of fewer restrictions. What would I do? What would I say? How would I look? This kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Now that you've brought up that you like you've had questions, I am also coming up with questions at this time, because when they were younger, like, she did like Maddie, she did think of him as her best friend. However, she never like looked at him beyond the Chris Granny, the guy that she actually had a crush on. And then it was when she met him as an adult that she was like, oh, maybe it was because she just realized he was not something that she had anymore.
Yeah.
When he was like, we haven't spoken to each other in like since high school. And she was like, oh, I don't like that. That means I'm alone and blah, blah, blah. And then maybe she's looking at him in different eyes with different eyes because she realizes she's lost him. And like, that'll obviously make you think over things.
Yeah.
But again, I now have really concrete questions about whether or not he knew that she was, like, believed that she was 13 again. Because then why else would he be kind of falling back in love with her if she wasn't acting like her 13-year-old self? And then that reminded him of his 13-year-old self, you know?
Oh.
Because it's not like he's falling in love with the adult version. Yeah, it's not like he's falling in love with the adult version. He's falling in love with literally the 13-year-old version of her.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Things to think
I just thought of that.
Oh my god, because you know what? This is a big question. Think of the timeline. He falls in love with her when she acts like a 13-year-old, but she's 30 and he's 30.
Yeah.
Okay? They jump back in time. So that's timeline A. They jump back in time. She takes her knowledge from timeline A into timeline B, grows up the intervening 18 years or whatever. He is the same person as he was in timeline A. She is a different person now.
Yeah.
I would assume a very different person. She probably doesn't act like she did when she was 13, which is the person he fell in love with on two separate occasions. What? So who's to say that they would end up in that cute painted pink house with their little friend's couch on the front yard, kissing in their Converse and eating Razzles?
Because lots of people who were together at 13 or in high school don't end up staying together by the time that they're 30. Not because they have less love for each other, but because they both have grown as people. And sometimes people can grow together and it works. And sometimes people grow separately.
What my boyfriend said when we were watching it, that end scene, is he looks at Matt, what's his name? Mark Ruffalo. And he goes, yeah, no way he would still be that hot if he was domesticated from the age of 13. And I was like, hold on a second. You are right. They're both super hot still. They're both super in love. I don't buy it. But I only don't buy it now. I bought it when I was watching it.
Yeah, I bought it when I was a child. Now you know what? We know the nuance of the human condition.
Preach, write that down. Friggin' Tenet is about different timelines, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
This is Tenet.
This is Tenet.
Jennifer Garner.
13-year-old Tenet.
13 going on Tenet. I can't think of a pun.
My boyfriend also kind of asked the same question where he was like, so is he the exact same? And that was a question I'd never considered, because inherently he would not be the same. It was her separation from him that made him into that man that he was in timeline A.
Yeah.
But with her involvement and them being together and best friends and in a relationship for however long, he has to be different.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And so does she. Like, this whole thing. Like, you know what? They're presenting it that way. I'll buy it. I'll buy it. Because that's how the movie ends. So what else can I do?
Yeah.
But you just, it makes you think.
But it's just, again, it's again now just being like, they've opened up a Pandora's box of time travel questions now.
Oh my God.
This is not where I thought we were going to go with this episode. I literally thought I was going to be like, I love this movie and it is pink and sparkly and everything I love. But now it's like,
me too.
Cause then my boyfriend also said, so is she still a magazine editor? Like, there's no kind of semblance of that either.
Yeah. And that's the thing. They showed her having so much fun doing the job. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But then, she got the whole thing snatched away from her in the end because Lucy Lucy kind of backstabbed her.
About that.
Yeah. So she has her entire dream of being a magazine editor, like, kind of crushed, but not because she didn't like the job, but because the, like, evil alternate version of her and her evil best friend from that alternate timeline, like, screwed up the job for her. Not because she didn't love doing it. So that's, like, kind of whack, too. Because it's like, yeah, like, what's your job now? Did you still pursue that? Probably not. Because, I mean...
I feel like in my willing to suspension of disbelief for this movie, I feel like he still remained a photographer. He had more reasons to take photos now, whatever. He made her his muse. And then I think that she... I think that she still wants to be a magazine editor, but now instead of being like, I want to be like these other girls and I want other girls to want to be like these other girls, she's going to bring the kind of, like, real worldness into magazines and whatever, and then change poise
to Teen Vogue.
To Teen Vogue in that direction that she was talking about, that she, like, pitched. I don't know, but these are things that were not answered, and, like, who directed this movie? Everybody tweet at him. Gary Winnick. And who wrote it? Josh Goldsmith and Kathy Yuspa. What else have these people done? Let's find out. What else has Gary Winnick done? Kathy Yuspa has written For the King of Queens.
Okay.
The Mighty Ducks Game Changers. What Men Want, which is based on What Women Want. Which is based on What Women Want story by Weird Wild.
Is What Women Want the one with Mel Gibson?
What Women Want is the one with Mel Gibson. I think that's technically a rom-com. And then What Men Want is the one with Taraji P. Henson.
I watched both of those, and I find the one with Taraji P. Henson, like, immeasurably more enjoyable than the one with Mel Gibson. Maybe it's just because it's a product of its time. Like, the jokes were kind of dated because it was the 80s, right? Or maybe early 90s.
Oh, so she also wrote What Women Want, Kathy Yuspa.
Maybe they're a writing team.
Yeah, because I'm looking at Josh Goldberg, who is the other writer, and he pretty much has the same IMDb as this woman. And then Gary Winnick did Letters to Juliet. He did Bride Wars. He's done
one episode of... You know, I've still never seen Bride Wars because the trailer stressed me out.
You've never seen Bride Wars?
Yeah, I was like, I don't want to do it.
No, listen.
It's going to give me nightmares.
It's not a seminal movie, but there is a scene in it that I think right now you might not be emotionally ready for.
Oh, God.
It's a hair scene at a salon.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so we're not going to...
Not my recent trauma.
Yeah. So this guy, Gary Winnick, who directed 13 Going on 30, also directed Charlotte's Web, one episode of Ugly Betty, Bride Wars, and Letters to Juliet.
Interesting portfolio.
Interesting man. And then other things that I don't recognize, so I just called out the ones that I do recognize. Man, I've been thinking about what my rating was going to be for this movie, and then now having talked about it more, I feel like it's going to change.
Well, what is your take? What is your
rating? Oh, wait, before we get into the take, did you like how, when they were all 13-year-olds, the neckerchief that Tom Tom ties around little Jenna Rink's eyes is the same pattern as the dress that she wears to the Poise magazine party.
And the same sleep mask that she wakes up in. I love that detail. I think that the costume department on this movie smashed it out of the park.
Yes. This is like amazing. precursor to Confessions of a Shopaholic / The Devil Wears Prada, you know? Oof. Like, they just got
hate
better.
And love in that order.
Yeah. They just got better as time went on.
Mm-hmm. And now we've come far enough away from when those movies coming out that, like, the fashion was fashioning at the time, and then it weren't, and I couldn't even look at it, and I went, kitten heel knee-high boots with the pointed toe with a mini kilt and a cropped blazer with frayed edges. No, that's too much. Wow. And now I look at it and I go, it's retro. Now I can look at it and I don't feel cringe and I don't think about the outfits that I... Do you remember when leggings only went about 3 inches past your knee?
Oh, God. That's the Disney Channel...
Bro, I was thinking about the genesis.
Claws in us.
Yes. I was thinking about the genesis of leggings. So when they started super short, they were tight, right? And then when they got long, everyone was very excited. When they got ankle length, we were losing our minds. The girlies were buying them up. That's all we were wearing. But of course, you still had to wear a shirt that was long enough to cover your bum. That was the rule if you were wearing leggings. And then along came yoga pants, which as we know are... a legging that flares out at the knee at the bottom, and it's like a wide leg legging. And then those went out of style. We went full yoga pants became synonymous with leggings.
Yeah.
And now yoga pants are so synonymous with leggings that we have to say that what we used to call yoga pants are now called flared leggings.
Yeah.
Time is a flat circle, bro.
Time is a flat circle. Fashion is also cyclical. Fashion is I was going to send you this TikTok that was very, the fashion is reflecting the economy, and because we're like heading into a recession or are in a recession, that's why less actresses were wearing necklaces and jewelry on the red carpet. And literally the phrase that they used was recession core.
Oh, work recessionista.
So we talked about that piece of pattern that existed in all of her whatever.
My in the film, as we call it in the film business, a recurring motif.
Snaps. I think I've said everything I wanted to say about the love story. I think I buy into it a lot more because Mark Ruffalo and Jennifer Garner really earned their paycheck every day they shot, you know? They got the longing looks. They got the hot people. They got
Short King.
A short king. Her being bubbly and a sunshine and him being a grumpy little puss. So
that's a great, I love that combo. Honestly, maybe that's what it, maybe it's the Jane Austen in me that saw that and went, I'll take it.
On my special little rating, I think that I would give it, okay, originally I was going to come in and say it was a 9 out of 10. But on further reflection,
yeah,
I am going to give it an 8.5.
Because of the timeline glitch?
Yeah, because of the timeline glitch and like now all of these questions that I've come up with. And originally my original doc of it was because of kind of like the suburban kind of ending, which I was like, eh. And then yeah. Her pitch, her magazine pitch, her redesign pitch.
Yeah.
It was giving, but it not enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So 8.5. No, let's call it 8. 8. Somehow choreographed dance numbers out of 10.
solid. 8 thriller dances out of 10.
8 thriller dances. Yeah. I give
eight,
it.
Wait, what is that? What is that word when you just pop out of nowhere? It's like a
flash mob.
Yeah, but yeah, kind of like that. It's like when it when something is spontaneous. Oh, that's the word I was looking for. 8 yeah. Spontaneous dance choreographed dance numbers out of 10.
8 spontaneous dance numbers out of 10 is what I would give it now. Molly, what about you?
I would give it, for the same reasons as you, I'm going to be a little harsher, though. I'm going to give it 6 razzles out of 10.
That's fair. That's what
because
I
also, the cringe kind of shoved it down a little bit more. It was an uphill battle. Yeah. But overall, the building blocks were there. And like you said, you know, Jay Garner and Mark Ruffalo, they put their whole butts into it. Yeah. And the fashion also was pulling it up a little. So, yeah, you know, this was a solid push and pull. This was a real teeter totter of rating emotions. So,
yeah, and now I have a comment about my the way I rate things.
What?
Only because recently I was called out by a good friend.
Oh no.
About what happened. You were there in the group chat.
Did I black it out?
You were like, they're fighting. We weren't actually fighting. It was Amy being upset about rating I gave Last Christmas versus
Princess Bride.
The Princess Bride, yeah.
Yeah. A travesty.
And then I was thinking about it and I was like, am I wrong? And I was like, you know what? I'm not wrong. I rate these movies based off of how I feel and how they have made me.
And your butt. Yeah.
My heart and my butt have decided the numbers for me. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm not good at
math. The heart and the butt have crunched the numbers. We've double-checked the math. We've come out at the exact same place we started.
I judge based off of how the movies make me feel and how the romances make me feel. And that's all I'll say on that. Not that literally anyone has ever had a problem with how I rate anything. I just wanted to pretend to have a thing to need clarification on.
Yeah.
I want to make something clear. Yeah. Here's the tea. Do you remember that scandal?
What scandal? About tea?
About James Charles and Tati.
Oh my God. Yes. And he was saying penis and cock at the dinner table. With her friends around? It was far too much.
Tati, literally you're hanging out with a teenager and you're like a 30, 40-year-old woman and you're like, this child is saying penis and cock. Come on, girl.
He was really out of control for that.
That child was crazy. Out of control.
That was very funny. And they were all so dramatic about it too. Wasn't her video called like, "It's been long. It's been
bye,
long enough." Or
"Bye, sister."
Oh my god, that's so much better than I remembered. "Bye, sister." Oh wow, what a way good. To be like, we're not friends anymore. Girl, it was. Are you in your 30s or are you 13 going on 30 right now? Because you're kind of acting like it. Justice for thoughts? James Charles?
No, no.
We draw the line.
Doing that. We are not doing that. I would rather die. Any final thoughts with these final sips of water? Mm.
What was your favorite quote?
Oh, shit. Oh, I wrote it down. This is just one of them. This is the one that really stood out to me. There's one part where Andy Serkis goes, "Who's your daddy?" He's like, "Who's your daddy?" And she goes, "Wayne Rink."
I hated that one. Hated it. Hated it down to my core.
The only reason why I like it is because she was so cute and earnest in it.
Yeah.
She's like, "That's my dad."
Yeah.
"You're asking about my dad? That's my dad."
So innocent.
How about you? Yeah,
very sweet, actually. I like the part where she was leaving the apartment and she was chatting with her 13-year-old neighbor. And she was like, "Oh, where are you going?" She's like, "Oh, I have to go do adult stuff. Good luck with fractions." And then just leaves. Hops into the cab and leaves. So funny.
Good luck
with fractions. That's how I'm going to end conversations now. I'm like, "Later, losers. Good luck with fractions. Beep, beep." And then I speed off on my Vespa.
I love that little dynamic, however weird it is, because I just remember when you were 13 and you saw a 30-year-old lady and you were like, wow. Especially if she looked put together and stuff, you were like, wow, that's a princess.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to grow old and be like that, you know?
Yeah. So I remember like, being I like young that they and included wanting to that. Be older. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's all we ever want. When we're young, we want to be older. When we're old, we want to be young. The grass is always greener and death is imminent. Anyways, Molly, where can they find you on social media?
You can find me at Molly's Outbox on TikTok and Instagram. Kat, how about you?
You can find me at It's Catherine Ram on any social media. Right now on Instagram, I am doing by the time this is airing, it'll be done, but I'm doing a countdown to my 30s, so I'm just going through my 20s.
I love this series, and you know what? It's going to be great, because anyone who hasn't already seen it, they can listen to this episode and then go, and it'll be complete, and they'll be able to, like, look through the full saga.
Yeah.
Of it.
Of my 20s, so starting from 20 all the way to this moment right now when I'm 29. So that's what's happening on my Instagram right now.
And that's what's happening on Instagram. I also found out today, unrelated. This is, you can cut this out if you want, but I found out that Jennifer Garner wants to get into politics now.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know how I know? Because J.J. Abrams endorsed her in some interview that he did. He's like, J.J. Abrams. Wow. Yeah. J.J. Abrams. Really? Yeah. I really support Jennifer Garner in her endeavors in politics.
Did you see when Cynthia Nixon of Sex and the City did it? She tried to run for governor of New York.
She's got the haircut.
She does have the haircut. She did not win, unfortunately. I thought she was going to, because she seemed very serious, and it turned out to be well, but it's like, I don't think they do well with celebrity governors anymore, but also I think it's because she's a woman.
And a redhead.
And
we know what they're like.
A redhead.
Just absolutely so many recessive genes. You thought I was going to say crazy, didn't you?
I didn't know where you were going with that. That was
unplanned. Well, because, like, red hair, you know, fiery, unpredictable. Yeah. Everyone says about red hair. Meanwhile, the red hair people are just sitting over on the side being like, "We just want to, like, read our books."
Yeah. leave us alone. You can find the podcast on Instagram and TikTok at VomCom Podcast.
Definitely check it out. Give us a follow. Comment on literally anything and we'll love you forever.
Tell your friends, rate us 5 stars. That would be very nice and helpful. And the next time we will talk to you, we will both be in our 30s.
Hey, catch you on the flip side.
Bye.
Bye.
I am fond of you, you know.
And a girl?
I often wish you weren't such a stinker.